The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
1490 WGCH, this is Kerry Lutz, and you're listening to the Financial Survival Network, which is brought to you by Miles Franklin. They've been in business selling gold and silver for over 20 years, and I'm a customer because when you buy, they ship. For more information, find them on the web at milesfranklin.com or give them a call at 800-822-8080 and get a free quote. What a month it's been. And then we start out June 1st, 2012, National Donut Day. Who knew that donuts could have such an impact on the market? To explain it all, here is Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. Mickey, you're traveling, but thanks for making it on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma for a Kappa Sigma fraternity reunion. So any Kappa Sigmas out there, 80 KDB. And what a brutal month in the markets. All the broader indices down 6 to 7%. That'd be the Dow, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and the Toronto. And then we look at some more speculative markets, and they were down somewhere on the order of 10%. And that would be the small caps of Russell 2000. The emerging markets index down 11%, and the Toronto Venture down 10%. No matter what my fellow newsletter writers and pundits said in Chicago a month ago, when they I look at some of these people as junior permabulls when they called the bottom of my arse, but you know, we were far from the bottom. I still think we're far from the bottom.
You're still thinking that there's more to go in this bear, huh? Got more life left.
The thing is, Kerry, it's we're through May. Retail sold and went away. We've got June. I don't ever quite know what to think of June as perhaps a transitional month. But we've got the summer doldrums looming in front of us of July and August. And you think liquidity's bad now, just wait till July and August. You know, it's all predicated from the fact we've got the euro ongoing. Going problems in Europe. I like to refer to it as the currency without a country, and it spread to worldwide markets. The Hong Kong had its worst May in 14 years, so I just don't see much light at the end of the tunnel until probably Labor Day, and I would hope something will turn around after Labor Day when everybody comes back to work.
It's been a bit disconcerting, and yet today, June 1st, we saw a major rally in the precious metals, huh?
Well, we did, and it was quite impressive. Gold was, I didn't get the exact closing price, but somewhere up $60 for the day. But
$67.10 to be exact, okay. 4.3%.
And so that makes up a little bit of the worst May in 30 years for gold. It was down 6%, so it's down 2.3% now. Silver, of course, made a rally too. All the PMs did, but down 11%. Very typical silver, always more volatile. The thing that has really concerned me is the drop in platinum, down 10%. Platinum is mainly an industrial mineral, and even though there is supply disruption in the platinum market in southern Africa, it was down 10%. Palladium, another industrial bipolar metal, precious metal, industrial metal, down 11%. If you go and look at the ratios, the gold-silver ratio is 56. We're comfortable with that ratio. Platinum, palladium still maintaining 2.3. But the platinum to gold ratio is back down, Kerry, where we started to talk back in October at 0.91. So our prediction of it going over 1 lasted about 2 weeks, and now it's back where we started.
Unbelievable, huh?
Yeah. And then we got Dr. Copper, PhD in economics. And Dr. Copper has been looking very strong until very recently, and we had a 12% drop in copper over the last month. I still remain a very strong long-term secular bull in copper. I wrote about that, but I've got a piece coming out soon on the short-term fundamentals of the copper market, and I was going to put that out today, and I looked at it about midweek. I said, this is too volatile right now. I need to sit for another week and absorb what's going on before I can make a call on the short-term copper market. World stocks are still very low. They've been flat. A bit of concern to me is the cancel warrants have now dropped down to 10% from a high of 40% about a month ago. Copper, which is trading in backwardation for most of the month, is now even. So there's some trepidation going on in the copper market. I would say that China is always a wild card. We don't quite know. We have no way to know what goes on behind the scenes outside of official stocks on the Shanghai. I suspect there's a lot of pig farmers hoarding copper right now in China.
Yeah, who would think that in China, copper would become the speculative metal du jour?
Well, it's really more than du jour. It's del año, and I don't speak French, but I certainly speak Spanish. It has become a very speculative metal in China. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, even more so almost than gold and silver, because I don't know why. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me other than when people have a lot of money, too much money, they gamble. They look for the exciting game, and copper is definitely exciting.
Well, the Chinese certainly have a reputation for liking the gambling tables, so that would fit right in. But when you really think about it, with a PhD in economics, it is a very good indicator of world health. So if you look at the futures market, I would dare say there's the most speculative future markets in the natural resource sector, and I will discount the soft commodities because I don't follow those and I don't know enough about them. But silver and copper are by far the most speculative metals traded in futures and options.
Amen to that. And then traveling over to the energy sector, interesting thing is happening there as well.
Yeah, nothing good going on there, really. WTI took another $3.50 hit today or something. But month over month yesterday, down 18%, Brent crude down 16%. Gas is still creeping up. It got so low it had nowhere to go but up 5%. The Brent to WTI ratio is about the same. We're still looking at the $14 arbitrage. Oil and gas ratio is down to 35, but we all know it should be at 6.
From a purely physics standpoint, it should be at 6. But in reality, we know there's... Like at our round table, we discussed with Keith and Marin, there's a lot of infrastructure issues that exist with natural gas that aren't as present with crude.
Yeah, and so I don't know if you saw today. I think I forwarded you the email about some developments with shale gas in the Gulf Coast that I'm trying to think. Was it Exxon?
Exxon is building a petrochemical plant.
So the big majors are waking up on gas, let's keep an eye on gas. From a contrarian point of view, there will be a time that we're gonna jump wholeheartedly into the natural gas game, and we'll probably do it before most people think it should be done. But that's the risk that I'm willing to take. Continuing with energy, the spot price of uranium is still holding in about $52. Everybody seems relatively comfortable with that. The fact that it has been flat and hasn't moved for a long time has been actually positive for the long-term market because utilities and consumers have realized that they're not going to get any better bargains on uranium. So the term price now is averaging about $61.50 with a stable spot, long-term buying, with the idea it's not going to go any lower. So for utilities and sovereign countries, the security of supply of yellow cake is paramount. And so we have seen some increased activity in the term market for uranium.
Yeah. And, you know, we're both kind of bullish on that one because you got to have the stuff. The market got really beat up because of Fukushima, and it was beat up before that for a while. In the long run, that's where the energy is going to be produced. Yeah, I mean, shale gas is great. You got to build the pipeline. You got to build the plants to process it. Like you said, it all comes down to a basically localized market, which leaves you with nuclear power plants. How else are you going to meet the world's ever-increasing demand for electricity, regardless what's going on in the world right now? Long-term, electrical consumption is always going up, right?
That's absolutely right, which is why I am a long-term secular bull on the copper market, because you got to have copper to transmit electricity.
Yeah, you got to have wires, right? You can't live without the wires.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that natural gas has been the dog so far this year, but it went up last month and it went up this month, and oil is taking it on the chin. And, you know, those ratios that we both pay a lot of attention to, they're shifting a little bit, aren't they?
They are, and we would hope that that we can come back in a month and instead of that ratio shifting to the downside, which is fine because it needs to shift lower, but we want oil to go up and we just want gas to go up faster.
Yeah, kind of like silver and gold, right? It's the kind of same basic relationship there almost.
That's an interesting concept that I've never thought about, and I will think about it, and maybe we can talk about it. And in that regard, I'm going to promote what you're going to do here in about a week, and we're going to do another roundtable discussion on shale gas and fracking with a couple of experts. The last one was Keith Schaefer and Marin Katusa. And this time it's going to be Keith Schaefer and Jim Letourneau, a Canadian Calgary-based oil and gas newsletter writer, and me. And we look very much forward to your compelling questions that make us think while we are live on the air, Kerry.
I've been called a lot of things, but compelling, okay. Challenging, well, maybe, but you know what's interesting here is we've been harping on this for months since we started doing the review that natural gas is too damn cheap. You got the guy in New York who's saying the rent is too damn high. Well, natural gas, by any reasonable measure, is way too damn cheap, and we know the reasons for it. But then when you see an Exxon Mobil jump in with both feet, and this is in Texas, so you know the permits are going through, and they're going to be online, they're saying, as soon as 2016, we are right on the macro side of this market. There's no question in my mind, uses will be found for energy that is in abundant supply. It has to work that way.
Well, and the petrochemical end of this is paramount. It's oftentimes ignored, but it's an important part of certainly the U.S. economy. So I welcomed that news today.
Yeah, it's good news. Hey, and I wanted to bring up another thing to you. This damn fracking issue is so emotional and so divisive. Things that I do, all the issues I talk about, and you know, I'm no lover of big government, and I don't think you are either, and I talk a lot about a lot of controversial things. The thing that gets people the most bent out of shape is fracking and their perceptions of the risks involved. It's the most amazing thing. They say, I'm falling victim to propaganda. These people are brainwashing me. I mean, you can't believe the emails that I get on this, Mickey, and to me, the case is pretty clear that nobody wants a BP in Pennsylvania or in Ohio or in Texas, and they'll take every reasonable and unreasonable precaution to avoid having that happen. And I don't want to be a spoiler for our roundtable next week, but it just amazes me the amount of emotion and irrational antagonism towards this technology, which to me, it couldn't be more obvious, and I'm such a bull on it.
Well, to pull an expression out of the 80s, let them freeze in the dark.
Yeah, you're so right. And let me tell you another thing. I have natural gas in my house. The last house had oil. The natural gas, I think, is about half the price. It's much cleaner. It's much faster burning. I never have a smell of oil and soot hanging in the air in the basement like I used to have when the thing would back up. I don't have to have the tank pumped, and it's just a much better fuel that it's worth taking the risks to get to it, especially those risks are so manageable that I'm a big proponent of it, and I don't get the whole stink over it. We have other things much more important to be discussing than imaginary ailments from a technology that is saving our bacon here in the United States.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. Come with me the next time I go to Northwest China and spend a month in a bush camp, and we heat our wall tents with a coal-burning stove, and you'll learn something about dirty air and living with clogged-up lungs.
Oh, totally. And, you know, in New York City, they used to burn coal. There was a big stink. They finally shut down the coal-burning power plants in the Northeast 25, 30 years ago. And prior to that, you drive in from Jersey. I grew up in Jersey, on the New Jersey Turnpike, and there was an elevated section where you could see the entire New York City skyline, and it was yellow from sulfur dioxide. You know what? It doesn't exist anymore. Now, whether they could have cleansers on the, what do you call those things?
Scrubbers, rather.
And whether they could have done that or not, I don't know. But the air quality is much better. You don't have that black soot, you know, going into you and coming out of your sinuses. And you're so right. But people don't get it. But we got any other markets that we need to cover here?
Dude, let's do a wrap here.
Yeah, well, hey, interesting, though, that June 1st, everything turns around, but we're not covering June 1st. So
we'll cover June 1st on July 1st.
All right. You be well.